From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's Thursday night and we are back in the studio, The Dice Men Cometh, here to talk to you all about board games, card games, role-playing games, tabletop games, maybe the occasional miniatures game, all sorts of games that you might like to play with friends or strangers. And we have got so much to talk about tonight that I don't even have time to fit in any jokes.
Not even a funny one?
Not even a funny one.
How about a punny one?
Oh, don't test me out, Garth. Right. Anyway, it's episode 140 on the 27th of October, 2016. I am Mark.
I'm Garth.
I am Leon.
And Garth, what is coming up on the show tonight?
Well, we have an action-packed, packed show full of action. So we are going to start with what we, or more explicitly, what Leon has been playing this week, which is setting the mood, or the spooky mood for this show, which is, we will then lead into, what are some good Halloween games that we should be playing on or around Halloween, seeing as Australia now seems to get into Halloween?
Yeah.
It didn't happen when I was a kid, that's for sure.
Yeah, the costumes are fun.
They are. Candy, Mark, you're going to talk Kickstarter, give us more ways to spend our money. I'll give you some much-needed information on iOS because there is a lot to get through and that will really easily fill up the show. So let's get a really quick song on. Let's go right now. Wow. That was a good way to get started. So that was Hot Water and Milk by great Australian band Spider Bait. The number of times I saw them at the Metro in Sydney was insane.
I still love the Metro.
Them and UMI, countless nights. Anyway, those days are long gone. Unlike board gaming, which is still hip and with it. Now, Leon, can you tell us what you have been playing this week?
I certainly can, but since it is a Halloween special, I need Mark to give me some horror, scary, ambient music while I read the story of this game. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's some terrifying stuff.
Good thing you're wearing your brown pants.
Yes. The year is 1951. A mental patient, the Nazi war criminal known only as Klein, escapes from the captivity of the Crimson Creek Asylum. With his enormous size and supernatural strength, he overtakes the sanitarium guards, wielding a single axe. He dismembers nearly the entire population of Crimson Creek. A ragtag team of locals band together to hunt and capture him. After much blood, sweat, and tears, they eventually subdue him and hang him by the lake. With his dying breath, he lets everyone know that one day he will return to Crimson Creek. Horrifying, isn't it?
I love Alex the Seal.
So, yes, so Crimson Creek. Right, stop that nonsense now, Mark. So, Crimson Creek by Toystorian Enterprises, which is a brilliant name. It was successful on Kickstarter. They were after $1,000. They just beat that. They made $80,000.
Hey!
It is a homage to the 80s slasher films, which you just probably figured out from the story. It's a 2-6 player, semi-three-quartery cooperative pocket horror deduction game, because every game needs 30 different descriptions of the subtitle. It takes about 30 to 45 minutes. I'd say around 30 once you know what you're doing.
Yep.
Where players try to run to safe locations, peek from hiding spots, and search for clues, all while trying to survive the blade of the Hatchet Man.
Klein.
Yes, the evil Klein. So the objective of this game is to stay alive until morning. So you play through 3 rounds, and then it's happy morning time.
Okay, sounds like most nights.
Yeah. While figuring out which of you, of the 6 people that you can control, is possessed by Klein themselves.
All right. Sorry to ask a question straight away. Does the person who is Klein know that they're Klein?
Why, thank you very much for asking, Garth.
Oh.
You've just asked, like, the bestest question you could about this game. No, they have no idea. The person who is Klein, and who's the bad guy, who's the traitor, if you will, has no idea.
Okay.
That they are, which is a bit weird, because they could die, like, in the first 2 minutes, but then it turns out they're Klein. It's a bit... Anyway, so the purpose is, during these 3 rounds, you have to try and find Klein's lair.
Mm-hmm.
For all the different locations that are on the board, there starts out with 7 in the first round, then it gets to 6, and then 5 in the final round. So the board gets smaller, but luckily, the character pool gets smaller because people do the dying thing.
Yeah. Okay.
I think everyone can survive the first round, but I don't think it's actually physically possible in the game for everyone to survive the second round. So straight away, yes, there is player elimination in this game, and there is a chance you can be killed before you have much chance to do anything about it.
Should we maybe talk about that later?
Well, probably, yeah. But get it out of the way now so people can get their sighing out while I explain the rest of the rules. So on your turn, you can take two actions. You can run, which is move to a new location. You can peek, which is you look at these cards that have different symbols on them. And from those cards, you get to see where Klein's lair is. Because one of these cards will show you, oh, this is his lair. So I know in this location, he can't attack in his own lair, that you will be safe. And also you can declare it and you win the round.
But if you're wrong, does someone stand up and say, declined?
I mean, they would, but...
Mark, you should have said that, surely.
Oh, God!
I play with good people, so probably not. No, there's no... The only thing is that all these actions, they put you higher up on the exposure track. And the higher you go up on the exposure track, the more likely you are to be attacked by Klein.
And the further you have to stay away from primary school.
I would say, it's time for a Kleiner Nachtmusik.
Klein.
Which is way too cultural for you lot.
So, basically, I'm explaining things while you guys are punning away. That's what's happening. This room is way too hot for this shenanigans. So you can hide. You can take one of the three hiding spots and hide in your location. You can share, which is one of the coolest bits of this game. You get a card. And on the card, it's double-sided. On one side, it shows all the different locations. And on the other side, it shows all information about the clues.
Okay.
And the clues are to find out who Klein is. The locations are to find out where Klein's lair is. And when you share information, you have this card in front of you with somebody else. And you point to bits on this card. And
okay.
All you can do is point to things like the woods or the cabin or things like that. However, you don't have to tell the truth. And also, you don't have to tell them anything if you don't want to. But 90% of the time you will, because it's pretty much pure co-op until you find out who Klein is, which they might not even find out themselves. So it's kind of hard to say.
But that's, I think, quite a good dynamic, because it's eliminating the skill set of a player, because some players would be more articulate and able to say secret sort of messages and say, this is where Klein is, blah, 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 but not in that blunt way.
Yeah, and there's lots of different, like I said, there's... Like the cabin location. The word cabin is written on this card like 10 different times.
Okay.
In little different corners of the thing. So you could point to different bits. So even if you knew the game really well, you don't know exactly where they're pointing.
Okay.
Which I think is quite clever.
Yep.
You can also use the ability of each character. And I should explain the characters. There's six stereotypical 80s slasher film characters. What are they?
There'll be the jock, the high school jock.
The jock is one.
Oh, there's got to be a cheerleader.
Cheerleader is two.
The nerdy girl.
There's a goth, I'll give you that. So that's three. There was also a geek, so the nerdy guy.
Yeah, there's got to be the nerdy guy.
And then there's two more.
The old sort of professor crazy guy?
No, there's no. They're all young'uns.
Oh, okay, college students.
80s, think 80s.
Oh,
is there someone with really high pants?
The Molly Ringwald, the sort of homecoming queen.
Preppy mm-hmm. is one, and then the final one is punk.
Yeah, okay.
Mm. So they're the six different characters you can actually play as.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool. You can also then declare on your turn, which is say, this is where Klein's lair is, which wins the round. Or gets you murdered if you are incorrect. And then at the end of your turn, you flip over a card from this deck, which is Klein's attack deck. If you flip over the night sky, it's a quiet night. Nothing happens. If you flip over a hatchet...
It's not a quiet night.
It's not a quiet... Just yet. You have to flip over three of them, at least in a 4-6 player game, before he then attacks. Okay. And then everyone has a chance to run to a tile that they might know is safe... Or you might not have any information yet. You kind of just have to take a crap shot, and then he will attack. So that's pretty much it. And then at the end of the game, if you have survived, if anybody has survived to the end, you do need to figure out from the clues that you can find, which is another ability, which is trying to find the clues, who Klein actually is. Because if you don't figure that out, then he turns up out of nowhere and kills you.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're spending the whole time trying to find his lair to actually get through the damn game and survive, but you also need to find out who the person is. And it's quite cleverly done, because there's only four cards in the clue deck. It's like it's glasses, earrings, muddy shoes, and torn pants, I think. And each character of those six has two of those things.
Okay.
But not the same as anybody else. So if in those two clues you find muddy pants and glasses... Only one of them will have muddy
pants. Well, that's going to be Mark for sure.
Well, that's obviously. So obviously it's Mark. And that's pretty much it.
Sounds like a bit like, particularly that last part, like Too Many Cinderellas, where you're sort of trying to narrow down the options as you go.
Well, I was also thinking, is it Deception Murder in Hong Kong? It's probably maybe more compact version of that style of game.
It's not like anything else I've really ever played, but it's definitely got similarities to those things. It's very much co-op. Like the odds of you actually finding out the clues before the end of the game is hard enough as it is without sharing with other people, because the clues you've got to, it's not just a matter of I'm going to look for clues, you get to look at one, there's a deck for them as well.
Sure.
So you've got to get the right card and then you get to see a clue and hopefully you can share that with everyone else. But if you find out you climb, then...
Yeah, well, there's two things because having not played this game, I did a little bit of research just so I could speak some words.
Yeah.
The first thing is it seems to basically have a fair amount of game in a relatively small box.
Yeah.
Now, it is going into a very crowded market in that deception, we don't know who's
deduction.
The bad guy, that kind of genre. So how do you think it stacks up in that genre?
In all honesty, something that we don't actually do a lot on this show, it's not the greatest in the world.
Okay.
It's definitely worth a play. If you know somebody that has it, it's worth a crack.
Yep.
But as you said before, like a Deception Murder in Hong Kong, I'm recommending that 100 times before I recommend this.
Yeah, okay.
But
cool.
It's the theme of it, I mean, I grew up on 80s horror films and stuff like that, so the theme of it's definitely cool, but the actual game itself, it's a bit... So there can be player elimination. You can be knocked out very quickly.
Yep.
It's also quite hard to figure out things unless everyone's sharing. And it's a whole...
Leon, you were born in the 80s. What were your parents doing letting you watch horror films before you were 10 years old,
I had an older brother and sister, and I was pretty much raised in Congress with them. So I was watching... The first R-rated horror film I ever saw, I was about 8 years
old. Oh, my God!
Yep.
And, for welfare!
And guess what? I was very early desensitized and very sensible because they said, this is fake. And I went, yeah, okay, it is. Yeah. And went to school, and I was the sensible child. When people
sure
that
were
like 15 were just like, the Blair Witch is coming. And it's like, oh, you're so stupid.
Oh, but the Blair Witch is still awesome. Now, the second thing, the second thing I've heard is that the end game is quite fiddly.
Fiddly?
Yeah. Like the if you survive and if you then go and that final scoring or however that works.
Yeah, the final thing is basically you have a lineup card in front of you and you say which of the six characters you think is Klein.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've survived, you've got a 1 in 6 shot if you have no idea.
Okay.
Which I think the first game we played was that. I was the only one that survived. And I could have even been Klein myself. I had no idea. Because I hadn't seen any clues.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the game ended was because everyone else was dead. And so I just took a punt and I said, myself! And it wasn't. It was somebody else.
Wow.
And then the second time around, we got to the end, and I think it was Georgie and Oren that were left alive, and Georgie guessed it. Or maybe it was only Georgie that was left alive at the end, and she guessed it. And she was wrong, because Oren had lied to her earlier, because he just wasn't sure. We were trying to figure out the game still.
Now, this is newly engaged, spending the rest of their lives together, Georgie and Oren. Congratulations, by the way, but that's a great gaming relationship.
And this was after we'd just been spanked by Oren in Imperial... assaulted about an hour earlier. He's just not letting up on that at all. So it's worth checking out if you know somebody that's got it. I wouldn't recommend necessarily buying it, but it's worth a look.
So we're going to come back and talk about more spooky, spooky stuff.
It might not quite be 6:30, and this is not the news, but this is horrible, because you are with the Diceman Cometh.
That wasn't horrible.
Edge Radio 99.3 with the least horrible Diceman board gaming podcast in all of Australia.
Yeah, most likely.
Perfect. Alrighty, we are going to keep in that horror theme, because Leon, you wanted to talk about something dark, mysterious, scary. Is that right?
Yes, but we will leave Mark's sex life alone for the time being. get it? Because it's gross. So horror games, they're a big, big staple of our hobby.
And I
thought it would be best to we've probably talked about all these games before because we're big fans of a lot of them, but we might have some new listeners that haven't heard and thought, well, if we want some horror games, these are the ones to go for. So I'll kick us off.
Okay.
I've got my nice little list here.
Yep.
And these are games that would be perfect to play on Halloween. Perfect to play in costume, even under candlelight.
Yeah.
And I'll start by a game that I'm pretty sure I did play. I don't think I was dressed up, but I know we played it under candlelight. And that was Fury of Dracula.
Awesome.
Which, before the new reprint came out, we're talking the older one, which cost me...
So you're talking second ed, yeah?
I'm talking second edition, which was like, it was like a grail game for a lot of people. And for me, when I first got into the hobby, it was like, well, I want that.
Yep.
And they're like, well, you're going to have to pay this. And I was like, nah, fine, I'll do it. Screw you.
I will pay that money.
What are you going to do? And then I played it, and it was really, really good. The combat is a bit finicky. Let's not talk about that. But everything else in the game is really, really good. The hidden movements of Dracula and then everyone else on the other side of the table. There is something to be said about a table where there's like four people on one side and one person on the other, which is the way we played it. I mean, you could all just sit around the table, but we played it exactly one on one side and four on the other, under candlelight.
Yeah.
After I'd paid a ridiculous amount for it. And it's, yeah, the new edition is the one to probably to pick up because it costs you a lot less. And from what I've been told, it's pretty much as good and it streamlines that.
I was going to chime in. Did you want to talk about this game? My first experience with a game on my list was also by candlelight many years back. The original version, Portrayal at House on the Hill.
Definitely.
Talking about, you know, your 80s stereotypes. Yes, it's clunky. Yes, it's confusing. Yes, sometimes you've got to look up some rule explanations because... You know, with all those rule books, with the player book and the haunt book and the normal book, you've got lots of rules in there to get confused about. But just the fun of, A, you never know what you're in for when you start the game.
I've played it a dozen times now and it's never been the same.
Yeah, I don't think it gets old. I'm really curious to see what Widow's Walk adds. It was great to see that video you posted, Leon, of the with the gaming references. They talked
the must love board game video, yes, which is on YouTube, which I strongly suggest everyone have a look
at. That was awesome. They were referring to the Widow's Walk expansion.
Yeah.
I really would like to see what it has in it and what it adds.
Mm.
But for your horror game experience, you know, you've got to let your Euro sensibilities go because it just goes all over the place. Yeah.
There is something to be said about that game that I've played better design games than that, where there's been a rule I haven't liked and it's turned me off it.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's something about that game that, as you said, the rules aren't that greatest, and like things like, I've played it a dozen times and every time we get into a combat eventually in that game, we're just like, what the hell do we do again? We just don't care. It's just, I normally play it with the same group of people, which
Excellent.
Is two of my best friends and my wife, and we've played it so many times that we just run around the mansion doing whatnot and craziness, and we could not care less the fact that we know it's going to be clunky, we know it's going to be confusing, but it just doesn't bother us, which is really odd.
Well, if you don't go through upstairs to get to the underground lake, you know, the just crazy things happen where you sort of shake your head, but the immersiveness of it, the narrative arc just draws you in. And the fact that when you start it, you never know who the bad guy's going to be and you never know how it's going to turn out.
Yep.
You don't know how long it's going to take for that to happen. And as that tension builds, as you draw the omens and you know you're getting closer and closer to the haunt, but is it going to be this dice roll? Is it going to be the next one? It just sucks me in every time.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, I have to go with one of my favorite games, which is City of Horror.
Mm.
I have to, because there is nothing more scary in this genre than when you can't trust anybody because you guys are all in it to try and kill me, which is what's been happening a lot lately.
Yeah.
So that goes up there in the top of my list for the things to play, and I've not played it by candlelight, I must say.
That's not necessarily, but it is proper cutthroat.
It is, and I love the fact that in the space of 30 seconds, you can go from being best friends because you're both in the armory, and yeah, we'll vote together and it'll be fine, to being mortal enemies because you're both in the hospital, and no, I need that syringe, or I need this or that.
Yeah.
You're going to die.
Yes, that is true.
And it's a 3D board. 3D water tower. Does anything get better than that?
No, it's an absolute cracker. It's a game that is not talked about nearly enough.
And I used to love Mall of Horror, obviously the original version, because it was the first game I had that had lots of plastic zombies and the fact you were stuck in a mall and, oh, I'm going to have to run to the toilet this term because there's no more room in the toy store. was quite funny. But just the backstabby nature, the way that alliances just come and go like breezes in the wind.
Yep.
Yeah, and the new version, they've just made it better, more streamlined. It looks great. They have the plastic standees instead of the standees instead of the plastic zombies. But yeah, look, I really enjoy this one.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, I will go with another game it's probably one of my in my top five just favorite games in general, and that is Ghost Stories.
Yeah,
I've still never played it.
Yeah, we really do need to play it because the thing about Ghost Stories, as soon as you mention it, everyone says straight away how hard it is.
Yeah.
That's its thing at how hard. However, it's really hard. Yes, it's not unfair. There's nothing unfair about that game, and it is very close to the purest form of co-op that there is.
Yeah, wow.
Something like Pandemic is obviously very extreme co-op, and it's simpler. I would say for people that love Pandemic, you could go to Ghost Stories. It's not any more of a complicated the game.
Mm.
It's just a hell of a lot harder. Like, I've never beaten it. I've played it, I don't know, probably 10 times now. I've never beaten it. I've come very close quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But just the enjoyment of playing that game, and again, if you play it with the same group of people again, it's just outstanding.
And I want to ask you, Leon, because I haven't played it, but I've heard so much about it. In Pandemic, obviously, you have the swings backwards and forwards, really depending on what cards come out and therefore what colours of cubes are on the board early.
Yes.
Does Ghost Stories have that variability?
It certainly does. The ghosts in that deck, none of them are particularly nice, but there are some of them that are a lot worse than others.
Okay.
So depending on the order that they come out, and then sometimes you can find yourself halfway through a game and doing quite well, and then two or three will come out in a row that you're just not prepared for, and then it all kind of goes to hell, and then you eventually...
Literally.
And then also, it's a game that... It doesn't even need to do this, but it does anyway, that the whole point of it is you're trying to kill the incarnation of an evil emperor called Wei Fang, I believe.
Yeah.
There's 10 different cards that represent him that are in that deck.
Ah.
No, they're not in that deck, sorry. You pick one, and it's the 10th from the bottom, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
So monsters, he will come out, and then monsters will come out after him as well. But there's 10... So you could possibly try and beat this, it's hard enough as it is, and beat it 10 times.
Yeah.
So you can play this 100 times quite easily, which it didn't need to do, but yeah. And there's expansions as well, which... I don't even think are necessary, but they're there, so why not?
Now, we're obviously talking co-op horror. We can't go on without mentioning the perennial favourite of ours, and we talked about it just recently, so maybe we shouldn't give it too much airtime, but Dead of Winter,
yes.
And of course now with The Long Night, with the epic mega zombies pumped up to the max from Raxxon. And the bandits, and the tension in that game from, do we actually have a traitor? Is it Garth? Of course it is. No, maybe it's Leon.
Generally it is.
Now I'm really confused.
Because it's always Mark. Yeah.
Just the tension in that game, and you sort of... You don't forget that it's a horror game because you've got zombies there, but it's almost like the zombies are just... groans in the background why the drama is going on between the players.
Well, that's why I like Dead of Winter and also City of Horror, because it is almost like the perfect sort of The Walking Dead style game.
Yeah.
Where the zombies are ever present and the zombies are bad.
Yeah.
But really it's the other players, the other humans in this scenario that are the real trouble and strife.
Yeah.
And look, I just think, you know, you can't have this kind of conversation without mentioning Dead of Winter and Dead of Winter The Long Night, which supersedes it. If you only can buy one, buy The Long Night, in my opinion. But it is brilliant. It just offers you so many different options, whether you like the strategy of it, whether you like the dice rolling in it, whether you like the conversation that happens between players. It's just got a bit of everything, that game. It's brilliant.
Have any of you guys played any of the Walking Dead games? I haven't.
Yes, I have. It was a really bad experience, actually.
Yeah, I played one. I can't remember what. I think it was just called The Walking Dead game, I want to say. It was based off the comic book.
Yeah, okay.
Is why I wanted it, because I was a big fan of the comic book and the TV show, at least to a point anyway. And yeah, I played that. And it was like when I was first getting into the hobby, and I was just like, yeah, it's fine, but eh. I'm sure there's probably a good one here or there, but if there was someone that was really good and a real big standout, we'd kind of know.
Yeah.
Same as like when games get mass-produced, like when Star Wars Risk came out and everyone said, no, this isn't mass-produced garbage, it's actually good. It became a standout. There hasn't been that with The Walking Dead, although there's been a few on Kickstarter of late, which I find very odd.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's the Big Minis one that was not too long ago in Kickstarter, but I played one years and years ago, maybe 2 years ago now, and it was really, really dull. Because essentially it was you going from safe base to safe base, but every time your character moved from this hex to the next hex, you just had to flip a tile, and by flipping the tile, which was randomly distributed, it would have no zombies or some zombies, and you had to kill some. Oh, and it was really, there wasn't strategy, there wasn't that emotional attachment you had. It was more, I don't want this person to die purely because that's my character. There was no reason behind it. So I'm still waiting for that really good...
Yep.
Licensed property.
Yeah, yeah.
Which there are plenty of these days. Give it to the dudes that make Firefly and all those, and Sons of Anarchy. They can smash it out of the park. All right, let's do some rapid fire ones. Talking about zombies, because that's a thing. Last Night on Earth.
Yep.
It's a game that a lot of people I've heard slag off in the past. I think, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's really good, but I think it's a good game to have in your collection, that's for sure.
Well, I had it early on. I had a heap of expansions, and I... sold it, traded it early because for me, I was hoping it would be the zombie game, and it was okay, very clunky to explain the rules. And when I got Mall of Horror, that I mentioned, the precursor to City of Horror, I just was like, nah, this is it. Last Night on Earth can go. And I always want to love the Flying Frog games because of the visuals and because of the atmosphere they create, but clunky rules, and that just gets in the way of the gameplay, I think.
Yeah, look, I think we also should mention maybe Elder Sign, because that's a little, almost a light Halloween-style game, roll some dice.
Yeah, well, once you've played a bit of King of Tokyo and you want a bit more tentacle murdery.
Yeah, exactly.
Get some Elder Sign in there.
Look, it's an incredibly popular game. People love it. It's on iOS as well, which is great because probably fits that dynamic really, really nicely. And what about something like Zombicide, which is just expansion, 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 mini, 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 mini. Mm. If you want the feeling of there's too many zombies out there, then something like that will, I guess, just fit that bill, especially if you like plastic minis.
There's certainly a lot of people out there that like it, that's for sure.
I haven't played it, but it's one of those things that, it sells a bajillion copies, and I don't often see it for sale that much.
No.
So it must be half decent. And another one, the big one, maybe my favourite of the lot of them, Eldritch Horror.
I was waiting for you to mention that one.
It's just... Yeah. It's almost... it's hard to say between that and Dead of Winter, but almost I'd have to say, if you're going to have one horror game, have... Eldritch Horror.
Because depends how many hours you can dedicate to a game.
Yeah. if you're good at it, you can get through there.
I was going to say, it's not that long, and I think, you're right. If you want a co-op experience, pure co-op, and not that something that is incredibly difficult like Ghost Stories, then Eldritch Horror is just the sweet spot, I think, for working together, for, you know, you can put in expansion after expansion. I really love that one. Whereas maybe if you want that tension, then your City of Horrors and your Dead of Winter get you working against your comrades.
And the thing with Eldritch is it plays between two, or even one, sorry, and eight. And I've played it with lots of different numbers. And eight, we've done a couple of times now, we've made a big night of it, and it's been tremendous fun. I think last time we did it, we ate an entire box of Curly Whirlies between us all.
we did.
Which was really good. And you know...
Mark didn't share anything that night from memory.
No, but we did eat like 50 Curly Whirlies, which is good. But the variety of that game and the amount of times you could replay it with all the different story things that are happening, it's just gold. And it just keeps putting more stuff out, which is fine by me.
Talking about horrible things... The thought of Garth being on the toilet, that's horrible to me. We're going to come back and talk about what he's been up to in his toilet. I don't even want to watch. when I think about Garth in the toilet, I definitely want to close my eyes and my nose.
And have a good long think about it.
Yes.
That was Oingo Boingo with We Close Our Eyes. I love a bit of Oingo Boingo, led by Danny Elfman, the famous movie sound man.
Really?
That's where he got his start. He was the head of Oingo Boingo in the 80s. And they started doing all the movie music for things like Weird Science and other sort of 80s music. And now Danny Elfman, he just about scores every second movie out there.
He's got to be one of the richest people in Hollywood, surely.
Well, he's certainly got a regular paycheck coming in, that's for sure. He'd never be sure.
And get a royalty every time the Simpsons theme tune plays.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway, Garth.
I owe him so much money.
Back to you on the toilet.
Yeah.
With your iPad and your toilet paper, hopefully in separate hands.
Except there's a toilet paper wrap. So
except for that time he confused them and it was bad.
It wasn't good. But anyway, look, yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, possibly even a month since the last iOS update. Because I had the last 2 weeks off. It was very relaxing. It was good. So I've got a lot of updates to go through. So, Mark, get ready. Do some half-assed research while I'm talking because we are going to talk about paperback. The Tim Fowers sort of, I guess, port of his very well-known part deck builder, part word creation game. So just get ready.
I don't need to do any research, Garth, because I have that game on my phone, Android device. I've been playing it.
So you've got your own toilet as well.
I do it at work when I'm not working. I can have my little phone on the desk and make a word and
sitting on the throne on the boss's time.
I have been really enjoying it.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. So just a couple of updates first of all. Cult Express. Now this is a game that I've never really enjoyed personally.
I like it.
Yeah, I know you like it. And look, the thing I like about it is the 3D train. Yeah. I think that's really, really cool. But look, that is basically going to be out very, very soon for iOS. And I think it'll be the perfect kind of platform for it as long as they get the 3D graphics right. I don't want to see a 2D train because that will just kill it for me.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to have the boop, boop, like Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
It just makes it.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. So it is out there. It's going to come out within the next couple of weeks. So that's going to be a really good thing for a lot of games because it's that quick fun. It sort of scratches a lot of itches for a lot of people. We're also, quickly, I'll mention that Smash Up, again, it's been a lot of talk about Smash Up, which I've only played a couple of times. And again, it's a bit of lighthearted fun when you've got fairy bears or dragon
pirates
or whatever the case may be.
Robot ninjas.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that. And again, with the numerous expansions out, putting it on a app device is perfect.
I tell you what, Smash Up is something I'd be very actually interested in on iOS, even though I don't play many iOS board or card games, because I had Smash Up, I really liked it, bought lots of expansion for it, but I ended up selling it all because I just found the rules, like the descriptions on the cards, so ambiguous. I can't remember because it's been a while now, but it was just things like this card can't be destroyed, it is indestructible, but then other cards would say things kind of contradicting that. And you flat out didn't know what was what. So if the app can, you know, do that for you.
Yeah, streamline, clarify,
that'd
be brilliant.
That would be really, really good.
And I think that speaks probably on a much broader issue that we could talk about expansions and integration, because a game like Smash Up, where there are a million expansions, mm-hmm. Look, from a design point of view, it's bloody difficult to get them to all work seamlessly.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll park that for next time. Red 7. Now, Red 7 is still one of the games that I will throw into my bag if I'm going to have some hours waiting in an airport or if I need to have a quick game ready for something, because it is, just think advanced, you know.
Yeah.
It's by Carl Chudik, who has a little bit of a reputation in our hobby for, well, I don't know, Glory to Rome, perhaps, Mott and I.
Innovation,
knows how to do some stuff with cards.
We didn't play test this at all.
Exactly. It's pretty fair to say that he knows how to pack a hell of a lot of game into a deck of cards. There's basically been an app integration version of that.
Which, nice.
Again, look, it's a small game, but being able to play it on your phone, which is even smaller than a deck of cards these days, Mark, which is incredible technology, that's a really good use of an app, I think.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so funny. Was that deliberate?
Absolutely it was.
Yeah. Now, from one small card game to one of the biggest and most popular and highest regarded games in this hobby, I am talking Terra Mystica. That will also be out in the very, very foreseeable future. Now, I love how Board Game Geek say this is not a two-player game, and they explicitly mention a designer by name when they release this. Now, Leon, do you know the name of this designer?
Oh, that would be the great...
Yeah.
I don't design as good. I know games good.
Well, I did listen to last week or the week before.
Yeah.
Uwe Rosenberg?
Uwe.
No, I'm Leon.
Uwe?
Whereas, so anyway, Uwe, then they've explicitly quoted Uwe Rosenberg as not being involved in this at all. And I just thought, Leon, that just reminded me of you.
But hang on, Uwe Rosenberg didn't design Terra Mystica.
That's why I was saying Board Game Geek, when they announced said that this is not an Uwe Rosenberg game, and it just reminded me very much of Leon's pronunciation.
So millions of games are not his game, though.
I can't imagine Terra Mystica on a phone, on like a big iPad Pro 12, 13-inch, maybe, because so much going on, and your little bowl of brain bits moving them around.
That's why I'm going to be very curious to see, because, again, in Board Game Geek, I'm pretty sure they show the photo on an iPhone. And to stick it on a little iPhone, you're going to need several pairs of your glasses to be able to see the details. So I'm very curious to see how they do that. There are some really great implementations on, let's say, Tabletopia, for example. I've been looking at that, and I can't get a game of this because there aren't enough people on there at the moment. But it looks... looks fantastic.
Well, that was my biggest complaint with... I got Agricola for my phone. I got Le Havre.
Yep.
Couple of other, real Euros. And they're just... we're having to zoom in to every little different spot on the board to read things or every card. And it just didn't work. I mean, and even I've tried... they bought out the version of Pathfinder for your phone... But the same thing, like because you're zooming in on stuff all the time to read it, I won't touch Pathfinder on my phone, whereas I'm more than happy to play it on the iPad.
Yep, and I think that's a completely legitimate issue. Anyway, I wanted to talk about two things. Yeah. We'll get to paperback in a moment. The second thing is Fantasy Flight have released their first big update for the Road to Legend companion app for Descent, which is kind of their first version of... The app's going to replace the 1v4 that you mentioned briefly with, I guess, Fury of Dracula, and its Descent, and its Imperial Assault. So their big expansion is called The Delve. Now, from memory, it's about $8 Australian, which is a lot. However, for this, they are essentially giving you theoretically endless versions of a game because it doesn't procedurally generate, but it does... modify, it does randomize based on the collection that you add into the app. And that's one of the things I really, really like about the Road to Legend app is that the best way to use it is to say, well, I've got the base set and I've got those lieutenants and I've got that expansion. And it will then integrate into your gaming experience all of the components you've got. So the way this works is even with the base game, you've got five or six permutations of five or six different games. You've got combinations of bad guys that'll appear in different scenarios. But like us, where when you pool our Descent resources together and put them all in one app, we have got, I think, about 30 different versions of just this one scenario.
Yeah.
So, A, it eliminates the 1v4, which is a hurdle for a lot of people. A lot of people don't like being the one when they're playing against the four other players. And Mark, I think you're one of those
people.
Correct. What it also allows is that you can basically set up most of it before the game night starts. And that's how a lot of our Descent and Imperial Assault has been, where thankfully Aiden has done the hard work and created the map. The only difference being with this one is it tells you you're going to need this piece, this piece, this piece, this piece, this piece. You're going to need these lieutenants, these bad guys, da-da-da-da-da. So it's all ready to go. So in terms of replayability, this offers so much for that $8 investment that I think anyone who loves playing Descent, it is a must buy.
And what's $8? I mean, it's a bottle of water.
Wow. Well,
at the airport. A bottle of water at the airport.
Have you not seen the news lately that Tasmania has the cleanest tap water in the world?
Really? Come over to my place.
No. And lastly, let's talk about paperback because we have mentioned it. Paperback was released a couple of weeks ago. Now, it was... Am I saying it? Is it Tim Flowers? Tim Fowers?
Fowers.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce names properly. Come on.
So, we played this at BorderCon earlier this year.
Yes.
In the wee hours of some day or morning. And look, it mixes really nicely because it is a deck-building word game you are trying to get as many cards... Each of the cards have one or two letters on them. Some of them even have special powers that you can use when you use those letters to spell the biggest words, because more worlds equals more points, which means you get the bonus cards, which give you VPs. Ultimately, then, when the game ends, you add up the VPs and someone wins. Now, I was a bit ho-hum on the game when we played it. However, I have really, really loved the app version of it, because it takes a very, let's say, a longish game, and you can play a great game of this in 25 minutes.
Yeah, it's nice and quick, that's for sure. I'm the same. I've really been enjoying it. My only criticism, and it's, as I said, it's just because I'm playing it on the phone, is that the special abilities of the cards are tiny. You know, the letters are nice and big. The special abilities are tiny writing. And so I'm making words, and I forget to look at the, you know, ant scroll underneath, because some of the special abilities need you to not use that card, or to use that card first, or things like that. So I'm only getting about 80% of the game, but yeah. I have really enjoyed it.
And I agree with that, because the thing I find slightly disappointing about that is that when you're buying cards, you get the opportunity to click them, and then you get a really good view about what special abilities they have. Yeah. But I can't, for the life of me, figure out if there's a way to do that when the cards are actually in your hand. So it seems a bit silly that you're able to see them when you collect the cards, but not when you're actually planning on using them.
On the phone, I think you sort of hold your finger on them and they expand. But maybe that's the Android version, Garth. And maybe you've got the
inferior
iOS version.
But anyway, that's me. We better go to another quick song, because, Mark, just tell me how to spend my money.
I've got so much Kickstarter to talk about.
Boom! Green Day. And yes, you are, or I am, Stuck With You, because that was Stuck With You by Green Day on Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3. All right, Mark, play your music. Oh, here we go.
Oh, so he gets the right one for his segment.
DJ Rickards is in the house. Wiggity, wiggity.
All right.
Mark, you haven't got time to faff around.
I know. The love,
get straight
the love
into
kick
it.
Starts again with a quick roundup of some of the Kickstarters that are just finishing. Some amazing Australian ones. Medici the Card Game. They've raised almost $30,000. They're only going for $8,000. It's still got 7 days to go. You can get on board almost 1,000 backers. Grail Games are on a winner here.
And all of the stretch goals have been achieved.
Fantastic. Also, Tanya's Game, Dracula's Feast by Bluebeard Entertainment. Again, they were going for $8,000. They've raised over $50,000. 2,200 backers. That one's still got 15 days to go. Plenty of time to get on it.
It's amazing what happens when they come on our show.
And any amateur Kickstarter people out there, watch the video they put up on their Kickstarter for a smaller company. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. We also talked about Bladebind, the role-playing game for Craig Judd in Devonport. It's actually just finished, but it funded 150%. And a game we talked about, Pirate Plunder, the piratey card game from Lewis Grubb in Launceston. Again, it's just got a few hours to go, so by the time you're listening to this, it'll actually be finished. But it was over 500% funded. Lastly, Skywards from Rule and Make still has 3 days to go, I think, now. Again, it's over 300% funded and going gangbusters. So if you're not on board that one already, get on board. It's fantastic. Now, new projects. More Australian projects. They're just going berserk. Demon Espionage by Five Tails Games. Now, I say Australian.
Oh, do you?
There's a tenuous link there. Five Tails Games, actually based in Singapore. There's four Singaporeans and one Australian. It's just launched now. They're already over 2,000, heading towards 3,000. They're heading towards 11,000 is where they want to be. But it's still got 33 days to go. And we have even played this one. It's even got our logo on the Kickstarter site because we gave them some feedback.
We did.
It is a quick, light, team-based card game. They talk about being a party game. I sort of talk about it, I guess, it does have a social deduction element, trying to work out who's on what team. But look, you know, if you're after a fun, light, quick playing game, this one has some cutesy little art with demons and monsters. Very suited to tonight's theme. It's only $24 plus shipping, so have a check out that one. Demon Espionage by Five Tails Games. And another game that we have had a very brief look at, Smiths of Winterforge. Now, this is from Table Tyrant Games, who had their own little game with Tavern Fame, that's right. And now they've been taken under the wing of Rule and Make as a development studio. Now, this one launched only a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, I think. They've already got 14,000, heading towards their goal of 19,000. Looks good. Now, they do talk about it being a Euro-style game. Oh, I sort of feel like that's a bit of a stretch. It's really more a set collection card game. It does have a board, but I actually think they could get rid of the board and just have it as a card game where you're collecting cards, they're your resources, turning them into VPs. You've got a little bit of customization with your player powers, but it's definitely worth checking out. Smiths of Winterforge by Table Tyrant Games. The last Australian one I've got, I'm not sure about this one, but anyway, we'll mention it. Luminous Ages, tabletop card game, TCG, by a guy called Anthony Christo in Adelaide. Look, it seems less like a game and more like an art showcase. It's clearly going for the CCG market. I don't know if it's going to get funded, but it has some beautiful art, so you can check it out. I'm running out of time. I've got to get through a couple more. Of course, do I even need to mention Bears and Babies? Really?
No.
Really?
No.
From the team who bought you Exploding Kittens, it's got the great oatmeal art. It's going to raise millions, of course.
Already has.
41,000 backers.
Deep Madness is another horror mini game, just because we need another one of those. It's the designer's first game, so who knows what its chops are, but it's already raised over 600,000 with 142 minis. You've been shaved if you've got some beard envy. It's a card game where you've got to protect your beard from fire and food and go to hipster cafes. You even get fake beards with the deluxe version. And the last thing is I backed a spoon. It's
okay,
a folding
stop.
Kitchen spoon. It's awesome. We have got to go because we have absolutely run out of time.
Ending on spoons.
But check out the spoon. Check out all the games. Check us out at PAX.
And at dicemencometh.com.
That's right. We'll see you soon. Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.